Talk Central is brought to you by CloudGate, a micro-mega company. All the power of a PC, the flexibility of Android, all at a fraction of the cost. For homework or play, available at takealot.com or cloudgate.co.za for only $1,999.
I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 120 for the weekend starting Friday, 9 January 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like 3 minutes to nuclear apocalypse.
Shame on them for scaring the kiddies.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about Windows 10.
We also talk some more about Windows 10 and holograms and Netflix.
Also this week, WhatsApp comes to the web.
Woohoo! But before we get to that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in a second.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Oh, welcome to the show. Hi, Richard.
How's it, Duncan?
Good. What a week. Microsoft in particular.
Yeah, it's been an interesting one. Yeah. Really glued to the interweb to see what all the fanfare was about. Yeah. It's impressive.
Yeah, long keynote. I think it went on for about 3 or 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
Had a bit of a lull in the middle, I thought, when they went on about the gaming stuff. But it started well and ended with quite an explosion.
Yeah, a bit of a bang there.
So let's get straight into it. Let's talk all about Windows 10. The software is looking good, I must say. Cortana, the voice software, is being integrated into it.
Yeah.
One platform now for phone and laptops and desktops and tablets. All Windows 10, so the Windows phone name is disappearing.
Yeah,
code base, one core set of what do they call it? One
core base.
Core base. Looks like Microsoft is firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, it certainly seems that they've learned their lessons in the past. Their attempt to skip the version number from 9 to 10, I think, was a very good move to indicate just how much of a shift in the operating system this is. And I'm really looking forward to actually seeing this thing in action.
Yeah, we should get some sort of beta or technical preview of it soon, hopefully.
Yeah.
In fact, I've installed it. I think it was the technical preview that came out last year. I've installed that in a virtual machine. I wasn't brave enough to put it on the actual production machine desktop, but I may try it once the newer or the pre-release updates come out.
It's a little more stable
next week and from there on out. I did the same with Windows 8. I was running some of the pre-release versions on my production box, and it was pretty fine. But I've never really had a major problem with Windows 8. I know a lot of people did have problems with the removal of the start menu. I personally don't miss the start menu at all. I'm actually a bit disappointed it's coming back because I don't use it. I don't see a need for it. But clearly it's annoyed a lot of people, and so they've decided to bring it back. But it looks a lot better than it ever did before.
Yeah, it's almost like a hybrid version of the old and the new, kind of the old start menu and the new tile interface.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people that certainly did miss it, just from a convenience point of view, and I guess also having used the operating system in a particular way for as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
You know, you get used to accessing the start menu for a few things. Yes, that was replaced with that tiled interface and your Windows key. It just didn't feel as quick. Maybe call it an old school admin style thing, but it just didn't feel as quick and as responsive. So I'll certainly be happy to see that thing coming back.
Yeah, it's and the continuum feature where it really, you know, where it moves fluidly between the let's call it the Metro interface. I know that's not the right term for it anymore, but if it ever was. But moving sort of between the touch-driven interface and the traditional desktop interface, it's going to become a lot more seamless now. And I think it's going to feel a lot less like a kludge like it does on Windows 8 and Windows 8.1. You'll move between those two paradigms a lot more seamlessly, and it won't feel as if Microsoft's trying to force one or other way of operating onto you.
To retrofit, no, exactly. And also having it turn into a tablet version of the OS when you remove the keyboard from a tablet, for example, you know, having that definitive line between this is one version of Windows 10, this is another, I think that's going to to bolster performance a lot because they're able to separate those two.
Yeah. No, I'd actually go as far as to say that this is probably the biggest Windows or Microsoft keynote we've seen since Bill Gates took grips of Windows 95.
Yeah, yeah, and probably the most impressive too in terms of the technologies they've definitely announced.
Well, we'll get to the holograms a bit later, but what do you make of Microsoft's move to introduce a new browser in the operating system, the Project Spartan?
Yes. I think it's a good move. IE is... It's one of those things I think nobody wants to touch anymore.
No.
You know, it's got such a bad rap over the years, although we all loved to use it at one point in our lives.
So. Even in the non-techie market now, I see that as well. I think at one point, in the techie market, you'd see a lot of people using Firefox, then they sort of moved to Chrome, so there's sort of a mixture of Chrome and Firefox. But I've noticed, I go and help my neighbor, for example, who hasn't got the first clue about technology, help him clean up his machine, and he's running Chrome.
That's impressive.
Presumably because it got sold to him when he went to Google.com, but...
Or somebody told him about it, maybe. You never know. I think the browser, consumer understanding what the browser's role is on the computer has certainly become more of a thing than it was before. Before it was just, that's what comes with the machine, that's what we use. But I'm looking forward to seeing, Microsoft actually taking a different approach to a browser.
And maybe
aligning it more with the likes of a Chrome and a Firefox. Because, I mean, they should learn from the best at this point in time.
Yeah. But interesting, they're building Cortana right into a Spartan as well.
Yes. And I suppose IE could have had also a lot of limitations, I guess, with new technologies. And rather than fiddling with the existing code base, just redevelop it. I do believe they're still going to keep IE in Windows 10 for a while, obviously for legacy compatibility with some enterprise
features. I think it'll probably be there in Windows 11, Windows 12, Windows 13, and Windows 14 as well. There's companies that have to run legacy SAP apps and all this sort of stuff that only work on Internet Explorer 6 and stuff. And so they have to have that backward compatibility.
Well, hopefully it'll just be something in the background that you won't have to access as a consumer. And unless those features call it up.
You can just hide it.
Yeah, exactly. You'll never use it.
Yeah.
I also liked what they were talking about with the integration with new Xbox One, although I know PlayStation users have had some of these features for a while now.
That's one part I kind of missed. I had a bit of buffering in the presentation. Is Xbox One going to get Windows 10 too?
I don't know if it's going to get Windows. It's not going to get Windows 10, but it's going to obviously be compatible. Xbox One is going to.
But it can run universal apps.
Yes, you'll be able to run apps. You'll be able to obviously stream and record and do all those things. I think the operating systems will talk a lot more. More closely now.
So anything that'll run as a universal app and a promising Outlook and even Excel. Someone pointed out you can now run. You'll now be able to run Excel on your Xbox, which will please the accountants no end. I'm sure.
At the office.
quick bit of weekend work in between your Halo. fire up your company spreadsheets.
Love to see that.
But and it's interesting because I think this cross platform nature of the product means that we're going to see more and more of these universal apps starting to be developed. I think that one of the biggest problems we had with Windows 8 was that there wasn't a lot of development around universal apps, which is why I think a lot of people just never went into the Metro interface because there were no apps actually worth looking at.
But also the apps were flawed in their own right because you could only run them in full screen, right?
Yeah.
And who wants to do that? I mean, that's just silly.
On a tablet you do, but not on a desktop.
Yeah, exactly. I think they kind of missed the line. There was a very fine line between the desktop side and the tablet side that they just couldn't get right.
I must say it's hard to see at the time when these products come out, and I certainly didn't see these flaws at the time of Windows 8. But it's clear now that we see what they're doing with Windows 10, where they were actually really trying to go with this whole design ethos in the first place. And it's clear now that Windows 8 was a transition to where they were trying to get to.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think Windows 10 is looking like a much, much better platform. The use of that Continuum software technology is really cool.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a big thing for a lot of Windows users, and it could push up sales on their Windows mobile devices too. If you now have a fully integrated system,
True.
Something that the Mac devices barely have now is a proper Continuum type feature.
Yeah.
Picking up from where you left off, I think that's key.
Yes. But they're promising some new phones as well around the time of the release. But interesting that Catan is being built right into it, right? So, is it available? I'm not even sure. Is Catan available in South Africa yet?
Not as far as I know. No. I don't think so. No.
So they're gonna. I think it means they're gonna have to bring Cortana to many more markets before they release Windows 10.
Yeah, certainly they would. They would probably have to do a slightly more of a close to a global launch. I think. I mean, Windows, you can't restrict any of its features. It's too widespread. And I think the limitations you'd impose then is going to be. People. Yeah. That's gonna work.
Yeah. So what else did they announce?
I'm glad to hear that it's free.
Free? That's amazing.
For 7 and 8.1 users.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah, that's pretty amazing, especially for 7 users. How much did Windows 8 cost? There was a cost associated with it, wasn't there?
It might have been $1,000 or R1,200 or something. It was a much better price than what Windows 7 was.
But it was still, you still had to pay for it. It wasn't free. Windows 8.1 is a free upgrade if you had Windows 8.
Yes.
Yeah. So pretty cool for a year. I'm pretty sure that's not going to apply to enterprise customers though.
Yeah, probably not. No. That's where they make their money. Those licenses.
Yeah. So if you're a home user, you'll get it for free. But if you're the CIO of Anglo American, you're going to be paying.
You're going to pay for it. Yeah. Those are going to probably be the most difficult customers to convert. But if they get it right, if their feedback from the user base, the consumer user base, is good, the enterprise will pick it up, I think, a lot more swiftly than they did 7 or 8.1.
But it's so true that Microsoft has a bad release and a good release. We spoke about this last year.
Yes.
Bad release and a good release. Bad release and a good release. And I actually thought about it and took it all the way back, and it's true. Because, let's look at it. Windows 10, good release. Windows 8, bad release. Windows 7, good release.
Yeah.
Windows Vista, bad release. Yeah. Windows XP, good release. Windows Millennium Edition, bad release. Windows 98, good release. Windows 95... Maybe that's where it breaks. In the mid-90s. But since then,
One isn't an even number, so you can blame for that.
indeed. So what else? We've spoken about Spartan. We've spoken about Cortana. We've spoken about Universal Apps and Xbox. What else did they talk about?
Surface Hub, the high definition whiteboard.
Yeah, the 84-inch. They didn't mention a price on that, did they?
No. But I mean, to me also, that technology seems, I don't know, it's not really going to appeal to me, I think, or anybody that I know. It's kind of
it's meant for boardrooms. It's meant for boardrooms. It looks pretty cool. I mean, 84-inch 4K display with integrated computer, built-in cameras, speakers, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and NFC.
Yeah.
But it's going to cost a fortune.
But isn't that what the Surface was supposed to be? Remember that screen that was a table that you could put stuff on and it would recognize some of it, and you can pull out photographs from certain locations?
Yeah, that's right.
Surface tablet.
Microsoft table. Yeah, it's an evolution of that, isn't it?
I think it is. And now it's just a usable product, I guess, because that thing was very expensive.
Yeah. And this will be pricey too, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, since we're talking about the hardware, let's get on to holograms, which is the really cool stuff. I think they've actually there's two elements to this. First of all, there's a software element called Windows Holographic.
Yes.
Effectively, holographic technology is going to be baked into Windows 10.
Yes.
And you're going to be able to develop around the APIs of Windows Holographic. And they showed off their first product that they developed around this technology, and that's called, it's almost a prototype, I guess, called HoloLens, HoloLens, which looks really cool. And I'd venture as far as to say that this tech blows what Google's done with Google Glass out of the water, and probably blows the Oculus Rift out of the water as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think this is what Google Glass should have been.
Yes.
And what the other virtual reality should have embraced is the holographic rather than the full virtual reality interface just in front of you when you put on an Oculus.
It's kind of a mix between Google Glass and Oculus, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But I think Microsoft, for once, has a much better vision.
Yes.
And actually...
Which is remarkable, given it's Microsoft we're talking about. What's happened?
I would love to know what the Oculus and Google guys think of those conversations they've had behind closed doors. Because if they can pull this technology off from those videos, this is going to change the way we interface with computers.
Yeah.
And it's going to be... you can use it anywhere. There's no wires that's connecting. You know, you don't need a mobile device to power this thing. It can run on its own. And
I mean, those glasses need to get smaller with in future iterations. I certainly won't be buying version one of this product. I think it will. Tech always improves. 10 years from now,
it's inevitable.
10 years from now, this could be an amazing product.
But it was it's not intended to be worn like a Google Glass all day, which is one of the interesting things. So Google Glass was designed to be worn all day, but its battery life was atrocious.
Yeah.
This, I mean, obviously battery life is going to be an issue. They didn't talk about it.
No.
But the fact that you're only going to be wearing this for a few hours at a time, whether you're playing a game or whether you're actually doing some work on it. Mm. You know, those 3D design features they showed off, which was very impressive.
Mm.
But the Minecraft demo that they showed, or the video where you can play Minecraft in your living room, tap on your table and it'll actually break the blocks. It's impressive. It really is impressive. I'm really looking forward to seeing this and how it can be used in day-to-day life.
Now, what does this tell us about Microsoft? I mean, this has been a very staid, conservative company for a very long time. At least since, I'd say, 2000. What's happened here? Is this the new guy? Was this already underway under Steve Ballmer? Has Microsoft found a new innovative core? Has this happened by chance? Or is this the new Microsoft, a new innovative Microsoft that's really going to run rings around the competition?
To me, it certainly seems like a more focused Microsoft now. And I could put a lot of that down to Satya Nadella's influence within the business. But who knows? Some of the stuff could have been in the prototype room in Ballmer's days. But again, with the right focus, this could become a really good product.
Mm.
And perhaps that's what happened. It could also be that this was just conceptualized and developed within the last 2 years. I mean, you can also understand that could be the case.
What's amazing as well... given how many leaks there are in this industry, I mean, Apple can't announce anything anymore without it being leaked well before the press conference. Here's a major event, a major keynote, and this hadn't leaked.
Yes, nobody talked about it before this time. No. I think that's what made it such a big surprise, too.
But you know where they joked during the presentation? Do you know where they hid the R&D team that was working on this?
No.
In the main Microsoft Visitor Center on the Seattle campus. In the Visitor Center.
Hiding in plain sight.
Hiding out in plain sight,
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
No one thought to look in there, right?
Yeah. Oh, Microsoft, you kidders.
But very cool technology, and it's going to ship around the same time that Windows 10 ships, so sometime in the spring of this year.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's coming to South Africa.
Yeah, with something like this, I think people are going to find ways to bring it in here, but they are going to have to look at a global expansion, especially if it ties in so closely with our Microsoft operating system.
Mm.
And considering the competition that's out there, not that there's direct competitors to this product, but if you look at Google Glass, the now defunct Google Glass, they're not doing those anymore, are they?
I read a lot of stories in the last week about Google Glass, and I can't quite figure out whether they cancelled the project or not, but certainly
you can't buy it anymore.
It's clear that it's not been successful.
And even the Oculus, because if you look at the Oculus, it's nice for many things, but the fact that you're looking into a completely digital world, so everything has to be rendered that you see.
Mm.
Where with this technology, it only renders the holograms that you need to see. And that to me is a big differentiator in terms of the performance potentially.
I was actually interested in the fact that Google effectively pulled the plug on Google Glass just a few days before this Microsoft press conference. I wonder if they got a wind of what was coming and they said,
we
can't compete with this. Let's start again.
But if Google can incorporate this type of technology, obviously it needs to rethink the way the glass looks, because you can't just have this in the corner of your eye. You actually need a full overlay on your on your eyes or on your field of view.
I think that the management and devs at both Google and at Oculus, which is now owned by Facebook, are having rethinks about their product strategies.
Yeah.
In light of this.
Now, I would say well done, Microsoft. Really, it's such a leap from what we would have expected them to do.
Yeah, exactly. I think everyone was like, WTF? Where on earth did this come from? something straight out of Star Trek from the company that brought you Excel.
Yeah, I know, it blows the mind, doesn't it?
Anyway.
But if you look, just on one last point I want to make, if you look at the on the demo video, and you can find these online, where they show the TV screen that you can actually pull and put in any position, if they can get the clarity on that right, this could be a big competitor to the old school screen, the LCD panel. I mean, you won't replace it, let's be honest. But, I mean, imagine putting on a headset and you can watch a program anywhere. You don't need to have a TV against the wall.
Mm.
I find that very intriguing in its own right.
Yeah,
so we'll see how that plays out.
It's going to be fascinating. I think Microsoft just kickstarted a big race here. I think Apple, of course, will be have paid attention to what's going on here as well. Anyway, let's move on. There's plenty of other stuff that happened this week apart from Windows 10. In fact, the story broke at the same time the Microsoft keynote was happening, and that's that WhatsApp is coming to the web. It has come to the web, except for iPhone users.
Yeah, for once we lose out on that if you're an iPhone user. But yeah, look, it's inevitable it'll come to that, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's difficult to know why it's not coming to iPhone users. I've read all sorts of speculation online about why it may or may not have, why it hasn't come yet, including the way that Apple secures its device, because this web app actually continues to communicate with your smartphone during communication. It's just almost an extension of your smartphone on the web.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting approach that WhatsApp's taken. I'm not sure why they've gone that route. I actually, frankly, wish they would. Just allow you to use their software on whatever platform you want, uninstall it on your phone, and I'd love to be able to install it on multiple devices. I don't know why they don't do that. It's a real pain.
It could be a user authentication issue to ensure that the one person that uses it on their mobile device linked to your phone.
Yeah.
You know, so supposed to prevent spammers from taking over the platform.
Maybe, but I mean, Google Hangouts, for example, which I also use, I run on multiple devices. I run it on my Mac, on my PC, on my Android phone, on my iPad, and when a message comes through, it just gets delivered to all of those devices. Or if I'm happen to be in a conversation at a time, it'll just deliver it to that particular device that I'm working on.
Sure.
And I see no reason why WhatsApp cannot do the same.
Mm. Well, maybe let's hope it's early phase versus phase one, phase two type of launch.
But WhatsApp, there's no doubt WhatsApp is massively popular, so it's not something you cannot actually not use. Mm-hmm. I've got an Android phone, so I've installed it, and it works brilliantly. It only works with Chrome at the moment. It's coming to other browsers soon. In Chrome, you can, I don't know if you can do it on the Mac version, but certainly on the PC version, you can create I think you could call it a web app or a short application shortcut on your task tray through the browser. So it appears as if it's a normal Windows application your task tray. So you can just open it up like WhatsApp, has a WhatsApp icon, fire it up, and off you go. And it's brilliant because, I'm always getting interrupted with WhatsApp messages all day long, and it's a pain to pull out your phone, type on the little keyboard. It's very slow.
Yeah.
You can simply do it on your desktop and have a quick conversation with someone, and it's helping my product, saving minutes every day at least.
We had this conversation just before the show as well, the fact that with iOS and messages you can do something similar with your SMS function on your phone. I found that makes it a lot more convenient to actually text people, to message people again, have full-on conversations.
Yeah.
If you can use your keyboard as opposed to your phone keyboard.
Yes.
And obviously you fall back on your phone when you like in front of your desktop.
Sure.
I think there can be a way for the communication future to have access to your client in any platform.
I was interested that WhatsApp warns that you should connect to your device to a Wi-Fi hotspot because it's going to chew data. I'd love to see someone do an analysis of exactly how much data it's chewing, because the fact that they've even flagged it as an issue suggests that
potentially it could be that they want to prevent people from starting to share videos and audio files or photographs and they're not understanding why their data gets chewed quickly, because if you're using it from your desktop, you'd use it as a as a desktop communication device.
I suppose if your desktop's connected to the office network or something and your phone is not and it's connected to your 3G or 4G network, doing the sync to your smartphone using the cellular network, even though you're chatting on the desktop with your, I guess that's why they've warned about it. Because many companies will go in and you'll work, but they don't offer Wi-Fi for cellular access or to smartphones, whereas they do to the PC through Ethernet. So that's probably why they're warning about it. And you're right, it's probably so people don't upload huge videos on their desktops.
Yeah, because it'll be much easier to do from your desktop.
Anyway, it's very cool development, and it's great to see that. Finally, I think people have been wanting it for a very long time. It's finally great to see it finally coming to the desktop.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So the other big news this week was the fact that Netflix is finally coming to South Africa. Not that that's stopped the two of us and many thousands of other South Africans from accessing the service.
But maybe that's the reason why they decided to do it. We've got so many users already from this feature.
But the big question is, they're saying they're going to be here in the next 24 months or so, hopefully sooner than that. But they're coming to 200 markets around the world, so it was inevitable that South Africa was
going to be here. Massive expansion,
yeah. So the question, the two big questions which we don't have the answer to yet is, number one, how much is it going to cost? And number two, how much content is it going to have relative to the US version?
You make a valid point there. I think that's going to be the one downside to potentially a global expansion like this. They will have to stick to a basic set of content that can be rolled out across any region without too many specific license requirements for that content. And that will mean that the US version will probably still be the best version of Netflix to connect to, with the South African version potentially only having a basic set of content, which I'm sure they will update regularly, but we know from experience that those licenses don't just happen overnight. So it's going to take time for the catalog at least to grow.
Yeah.
And also when their catalog grows, there's going to be fight for content from the other players, DSTV, Vidi, NTN's Front Row.
As I understand it, it's actually quite difficult for broadcasters and streaming companies to sign up exclusivity around video on demand content.
So I
have a feeling that DSTV is not going to be able to sign up a whole bunch of exclusive agreements and basically keep the Netflix offering here a fairly pathetic offering. They're actually going to be able to Netflix is going to be able to bring a reasonably compelling offering here, but I think you're right, it's probably not going to be as good as the US edition, and I think you may find that the many thousands of South Africans who already subscribe to Netflix may simply continue to subscribe to the US version.
Yeah. I mean, there's already a big difference between the US and UK versions, and I don't subscribe to the UK version for that reason. All the nice stuff comes to the US version first. But I also I agree with you what you said. I think Netflix could also change a lot of the licensing issues we've seen to date for global releases, because they've got such big clout, and if they can go to any license holders and say, you know, we're rolling out globally at the same time, I mean, that's a lot more value for those license holders, I think, than trying to negotiate individual agreements that are often tricky with territories.
For sure. Anyway, hopefully this prompts more streaming companies to come into the market and give the market some much-needed competition. Yeah. I think the existing players that we've seen come into the market so far have been a little bit lacking in terms of their content offerings. So I think competition will be good. It'll get more choice and bring down prices.
Definitely. And let's be honest, the Netflix name is... When you speak about video on demand, Netflix is kind of... It's the generic term these days. So it'll be very good for the industry as a whole, I think, and it'll stimulate competition.
Yeah.
In terms of the pricing, I predict it'll probably go between 150 and 170. I think they'll probably charge a premium for broader catalog.
And they'll charge VAT on that as well. I'm really looking forward to the launch of HBO's streaming service later this year. I think they've got great content, and I think that could be a compelling proposition, and I will certainly be making use of my VPN service to have a look at that.
Indeed.
Cool. Let's move on to our features of the week. We don't have a loser this week. Everyone can breathe easy. but we do have a winner, and I think it's an obvious one, and that's Microsoft's new CEO, Satya Nadella. Who has clearly settled into the role very quickly and is doing good things at Microsoft. For anyone who saw the 3.5-hour keynote, he came in for the last 15 minutes or so and gave what I thought was almost a Steve Jobs-esque presentation.
But one more thing.
He actually left the one more thing for the previous guy, Kidman or whatever his name was, who did the holograms. But he really came out on the stage and I thought looked... in control of the situation. He really exuded confidence and coolness on that stage, and I think that I get the impression that he's going to take Microsoft places. And if I was still silly enough to be playing the stock market, I think I would buy Microsoft shares. Just based on what we saw at that keynote this week.
Yeah, certainly in Microsoft, it's a new company, and I think we're starting to see the direction that it intends to go in the next decade.
Cool. Great. Let me pick up my pick this week. I'm actually only picking it because I want to give some advice, which I learned during the course of this week. I've recently installed, in fact, last week, the update to Android became available on the LG G3, which is my primary device.
Yeah.
So I installed a Lollipop Android 5.0 on it, and I found my device had slowed down terribly, and it was almost unusable. And very frustrated by this, I went onto the web and started Googling issues of Google problems Lollipop LG G3, and a suggestion came back which has solved my problem. In fact, I'm going to do this every time I install a major upgrade to Android on any device in future. And that's once you've installed the update and your phone is rebooted, etc., to then reset it to factory settings. It doesn't reset to the previous version of Android that was on your device. It resets to the current version that's installed. So it reset to Lollipop and reset all the settings and gave me a blank canvas to start again. Because it's so easy to reinstall all your apps now, you just simply Google simply keeps a record of it. You just say download them again. You install them, you move your icons back to where you wanted them, and Bob's your uncle. Your device is back to the way you wanted it. And but the performance of it is fine now. I think as a matter of default, even if I'm finding a device is okay after I've installed Lollipop or whatever Android update I've done, I think I'm just as a matter of default once I've done that on my, certainly on the primary device I'm using, I'm simply going to reset to factory settings and download my apps again. Because it clearly solved the issues that the G3 was having after the Lollipop update. And if you own a G3, I recommend doing that. If you run into any sort of speed performance issues on your device, because it works a treat. So that's my pick this week, Lollipop, but only because I wanted to relate to the
tip.
Yeah.
So my little pick is an application that actually I think it was launched last year, but it certainly won a few awards last year in 2014. And it's from a Cape Town-based development company, and the app is called Over. What makes this nice is it essentially allows you to overlay text and different fonts and different styles over your photographs that you can share with Instagram, and it's the styles that are very nice, and that's one of the things that attracted me to the application first. It's very much clean design fonts that you can put on. There's obviously an in-app purchase that you can buy. For what's it, R11 on Android, I think, and it is $1.99 on the iOS iTunes store. It's certainly worth adding to your photography arsenal if you're into mobile phone photography, and it really gives it a nice edge. And it's a local app, so
great.
Even more reason to punt it.
Brilliant. So that's called Over. Android and iOS.
Android and iOS.
Does it work on iPad as well?
I don't think so, no. Okay. It doesn't. No. And it the website URL is madewithover.com.
Cool. Go check it out.
Great stuff.
Excellent. Well, that's the show for this week. Thanks, as always, for listening. We are aware that some of our listeners have been having issues downloading or receiving the podcast in certain third-party applications. We've had a couple of people mailing us about that. We are looking into it. We don't know what the reason is for it yet, but we are trying to get to the bottom of it. So hopefully it'll be fixed in the next few weeks. But in the interim, please do keep listening through the website or through your favorite app if you are able to receive the updated podcast through that app. But as I say, we're looking into the issue and hope to have it resolved soon. As always, if you've got any feedback, and we love hearing from you, you can email us at info@techcentral.co.za. From Rafat and myself, until next time, take care. Cheers.
Ciao.